Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Michael Ames, who, along with his co-author Matt Farwell, has written the brand new book American Cipher, Bo Bergdahl and the U.S. Tragedy in Afghanistan. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Michael, as I got this book in the mail, I looked at the name Bo Bergdahl, and I knew it should ring a bell with me. He's one of these characters that everybody talked about constantly when this whole story came up, but I think gets relegated to the back burners of history just in the American populace. So can you kind of take us back? It seems like Bo Bergdahl was one of these guys that was catching all kinds of spears from the American public when this incident happened, and then it kind of fell out of the talk at the post office and the coffee shops. Why do you think that is?
Well, it was really incredible, and that's a great question, because I used to live in his hometown, so I had that personal connection to it, and Matt, my co-author, fought in the Army in the same place in Afghanistan that he did. So we each came at it with a personal angle. Your question reminds me, though, of the 48 hours or so when Bo Bergdahl went from being a guy getting a hero's welcome from congressmen on social media, including many Republicans who had been pushing for President Obama to bring him home. And then within just 48 hours, he turned into a vilified pariah and the most hated Army soldier in the generation.
Well, something I didn't know about him until I read your book is that he served in the Coast Guard a very, very short time. What was the circumstances of his service there?
That's right. He signed up. He volunteered for the Coast Guard, and he made it 6 weeks in basic training and then washed out with mental health problems and a diagnosed anxiety disorder. Yet 2 years later, when he enlisted in the Army had lowered its standards and provided a waiver, and he was let in by the Army, which most onlookers have seen as kind of an original sin in this whole story.
So by the time he gets to Afghanistan to serve in the Army, what's the lay of the land there as far as how the war is going from the home front perspective?
Another really interesting question. We interview his parents. We're the only media outlet, the only reporters who his parents have spoken to, and they told us about that time, and his father said, well, it looked like, if you were reading media reports at the time, that the war was winding down, and he probably wouldn't even get a taste of combat. That was definitely a false narrative being promoted by the Pentagon at the time. In fact, the war was in serious danger of slipping away in that summer, and it was right in the middle of President Obama's troop surge, which tripled the American footprint on the ground in Afghanistan.
At the time that before Bergdahl walked away from his camp, the popular culture, the narrative that we all had here was that he's a deserter. They're having to send people out to look for him, and it's costing that he's a criminal. And as your book explains, there's a lot more to the story than that. But the leadership over there, Michael Flynn got there about the same time as Bergdahl, right?
That's right. Right in the same period of time, probably just a couple weeks before.
So Bergdahl walks away. Was it as simple as just picking up and walking away? I'm gone. I don't agree with this anymore. What brought that about?
Well, he did walk away. He had what he called his fantastic plan, which he admitted to the general who interviewed him for his legal case. He was being sarcastic, of course. He called it ignorant and stupid in hindsight. But he thought that he had a plan that was going to help save his buddies in the platoon from what he thought was dangerous leadership. The Army had no problem saying that he was delusional. He had mental health issues. There was no immediate danger to his platoon mates, but he had conjured this scenario, and combined with his disorder, his anxiety, he decided he had to do something and act, and he winds up walking right into a Taliban patrol, well, into a valley where he was picked up by some local Taliban.
He can't be the only U.S. soldier to have these types of thoughts and have serious thoughts about acting on him, but what separates him from the people who don't walk away?
Well, That's another very good question. I think he was a unique case of a guy who had always been a loner, who was very comfortable alone in the mountains. He was really into survival, wilderness survival gurus, and he looked at the situation and thought, well, this is the same altitude as where I grew up in the backcountry of Idaho. I can make this walk, and I'm going to do it. And I think what separates him is just the fact that he actually went through with something so insane.
When a soldier walks away from a platoon, what is the government's response? And I would assume we don't hear about all of them, so why did we hear about this particular one?
We hear about this one because he got caught. He got caught by the Taliban, and he was quickly, within 2 to 3 days, taken over the border to Pakistan. And Pakistan, being our top ally in the war, that created some serious problems. And this goes back to your earlier question about General Flynn and the intelligence. There were credible intelligence that he was over the border within days that Mike Flynn saw. Within 13 days of him missing, there was overwhelming consensus within the military and government intelligence community that he was in Pakistan. Nevertheless, Army commanders continued to send soldiers out looking for him in Afghanistan as a cover story. It was a cover story to run aggressive raids for months and as a shortcut around rules of engagement. And the soldiers sent on those dangerous raids very rarely knew where Bergdahl actually was or what was going on. They were being lied to.
The whole war in Afghanistan, it seems like it's not really a partisan thing anymore. We've had, you know, President Bush began it. Obama ran on a platform to get us out of Afghanistan. That didn't happen. Trump doesn't seem to be able to do anything about it. What is it about this war that just keeps it going on that I don't think even kids that are going into it now know why we're fighting it?
It'll be 20 years old in another couple of years. The Trump administration right now is, however, in talks with the Taliban. The most high-level Taliban negotiations that Washington has run yet. Ironically, the Trump administration is talking to the same five guys in these negotiations who Obama traded for Bergdahl. the fact is, it's a bad hand of cards. Each president has to play it the way it's dealt. And Afghanistan is not a place that's easily governed, and it's not a war that we can win militarily. And another great outrage that all Americans should know about is that Washington and U.S. officials have known that there's no military solution there since at least 2010, if not earlier, early in Obama's term, and continued sending men and resources and money down the drain anyway.
We're talking with Michael Ames, who, with co-author Matt Farwell, has written the new book, American Cipher, Bo Bergdahl and the U.S. Tragedy in Afghanistan. It's available now wherever your books are sold, and it just tells a fantastic story about the backstory with Afghanistan and Bo Bergdahl and that whole situation. Michael, as the rescue attempt to get Bergdahl, it ended up trading some Taliban officials who were, you know, in prison at Guantanamo for him. There were all kinds of reports, false reports, or depending on who you believe, that there was a cash exchange that or a ransom that went bad and prisoners. But what was the story behind how that disinformation gets out there?
Well, it's important to note that as readers will find out in our book from some of our best sources, despite what soldiers were hearing on the ground from their commanding officers, and despite, in many cases, what those commanding officers were hearing from even their commanding officers, the military did not order a single actual rescue mission to recover Bergdahl. So it's a little bit of a nuance, but they were using Bergdahl as an excuse to send out aggressive raids as a shortcut around rules of engagement. That was going on for months. As for getting him home, that was a years-long process. The FBI and the Pentagon at one point teamed up. There was indeed ransom money that was given to an Afghan middleman who turned out to be a con man and disappeared with the money. There are incredible, eye-opening, shocking facts that people can learn when they pick up the book, I hope.
You've interviewed the family. As the Bergdahl son is, you know, in Afghanistan or in Taliban custody for that many years, what is their emotional state, and what are they doing as far as making contacts with government officials to try to get their boy home?
Well, they were very proactive. Where they live in outside Haley, Idaho, which is very close to Sun Valley, Idaho, which is has been a resort getaway for wealthy Americans for generations, and Bob was a UPS driver there. In fact, when I lived there, he was my UPS driver. Everyone, it's a small town, everyone knew him as that. And on that UPS route, he had some very well-connected clients, or customers, I should say, people, retired military people. And when they knew that his son was captive of the Taliban, people rallied around that family and did everything they could to help the Bergdahls connect with the Pentagon, connect with Admiral Mike Mullen, connect with then-General James Mattis. And there was a real rallying around the family by the working military to see them through this ordeal.
When it came time for Bergdahl's court-martial, and that took place at Fort Bragg, as he's getting ready for that, they're going to debrief him, and there's a scene in the book where he really takes the questioner back to his childhood. What was Bergdahl's mental state after being released from the custody of the Taliban to his debriefing there? Was he in the right mind?
It's a great question, and I think readers will be amazed to find out that Bergdahl, the things that made him different and the things that perhaps made him eccentric, unusual, abnormal, served him greatly as a prisoner. He was used to time alone. He was used to being resilient in that way. And he was also had an incredible memory. And what he did was take, he stored his memories in a visual archive that U.S. military officials and intelligence debriefers were able to mine out of him and use to create numerous classified reports on locations of Taliban and terrorist hideouts in Pakistan. And shortly after these debriefing sessions, the Obama administration and the CIA ramped up the drone war in ways that it hadn't in months, and dozens of fighters were killed. That's something that never made it into the media, and just goes to show the care and the thought that the military put into dealing with Bergdahl after he was recovered.
You identify in the book that at the Pentagon, it was really a divided scene between the people who thought that Bergdahl was a hero and was a traitor. Is there a general consensus now, after some time has passed, as to what he actually is?
In the military, you mean?
Yes.
Well, he will always be hated in the military because he committed a cardinal sin. You do not walk away from your platoon. That is a crime for which he was charged and pled guilty to. So he will always be hated for that. As for him being a traitor, there's no evidence for it. Unfortunately, that was spread by then-General Mike Flynn, who then, as your listeners will remember, joined the Trump campaign. And Donald Trump was one of the first people to publicly go out and call Bergdahl a traitor. I think what the fascinating thing you'll learn in the book is that the original source of the rumor that Bo Bergdahl is a traitor came from the Taliban itself. So when Mike Flynn and Donald Trump were out there calling Bo a jihadist, as Flynn did, or a dirty, rotten traitor, as Trump did, they were actually recycling Taliban propaganda.
Just an amazing, amazing story and a chain of events here. The book is American Cipher, Bo Bergdahl and the U.S. Tragedy in Afghanistan by Matt Farwell and Michael Ames. And Michael, just a fantastic book you've put together here. So informative, and I learned so much. Thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Poland, the Thompson Gunner.